Well, I don't necessarily think there's a huge difference between people in Moscow and the regions. I mean, it was more about the opportunity. Sort of big and simple black and white narratives seemed to be dominating the discussion all the time. Had a profile on Alexander Dugin and neo-Eurasianism. The way that this work was considered, which prompted a very unhealthy obsession with the fellow, and I'm sorry for that.
Hey folks, welcome to another episode of The Russia Guy. I'm your host, Kevin Rothrock, and this is the show where I talk to movers, shakers, in Russia-focused academia, Jekyllism, journalism, academia, and activism. It's been a long time since the last episode, thanks to the mayhem that Navalny has spread and kept me doubly busy at my day job with Medusa, but I have finally managed to edit and polish and publish this interview with Anton Barbashin, the editorial director at Riddle, an online publication that focuses on Russian affairs and features some of the sharpest expert insights in the field, actually, particularly from young specialists and scholars. I've recorded this interview almost a month ago, and it's just been sitting in my inbox, and you know, finally, here we are. So from 2015 to 2018, Anton was a managing editor at something called Intersection. It was a Warsaw-based Russian affairs journal. He's also worked as an analyst at the Center for Polish-Russian Dialogue and Understanding. His writings have appeared at Foreign Policy, The American Interest, Open Democracy Russia, Forbes Russia, and plenty more. Riddle is very useful. If you don't know about Riddle, let me tell you something about Riddle. It's a very useful resource for all of you Russia nerds out there. And it's fully available in both Russian and English, which is nice, pretty neat. I particularly enjoyed talking to Anton about his work because a lot of it, some of it, mirrors what I do at Medusa, my job there at Medusa, where I'm, you know, the editor, I'm an editor, I'm a translator, because I'm constantly trying to decide what's worth translating or summarizing or highlighting and featuring, you know, with the limited time that I have, trying to anticipate what the audience would like, what the public needs. Anton was kind enough to come on this show and share his thoughts. That and more in the interview. Now here it is. General kind of introduction for those who don't know Riddle, how would you describe the project to this to these laymen, these fools that know nothing of the project? Like, how does it compare to something that people may have heard of? If they've heard of the Moscow Carnegie Center, they probably know Riddle. But if they haven't heard of Riddle, they know of Moscow Carnegie. You know, like, what are the differences? What's Riddle all about?
Essentially, Riddle was a platform that, in its design, gave voice to a younger generation of Russian scholars and scholars working on Russia from all over the place. And roughly about a third, maybe 40% of people we publish are young aspiring researchers. A lot of them are from the academia, but not all of them. But essentially, Riddle is a project that is not afraid of going deeper in some of the niche topics, some of the things that might not be sexy or considered sexy for the sort of mainstream Russia watchers. And we like that. We like to tackle the issues that sometimes are very hard to digest, but essentially it is the added value that we believe we're bringing to the table that makes us, well, different from the others. Plus, we have the component of everything being published in Russian and English, so depending where you're coming from, you can always address two audiences at once.
Sure. And how do you find people that write for you? Like you said that you know it's a lot of scholars and you try to focus on younger voices, but if they're not all scholars, and even if they were, how do you go about selecting? You know, what's the criteria for this person would make a great columnist or a great writer for Riddle? Like what's the philosophy of seeking out writers?
Well, essentially, we are pretty much open to anyone. I mean, you could pitch us a proposal, no matter what your credentials. We have an editorial board that is helping tremendously with sorting out which articles we want to pursue, which topics are of interest, and if we are interested, we are ready to actually invest a lot of our time into making them more sort of interesting. I think an ideal Riddle author is someone who is who knows a lot about the subject they're writing about and focused a lot of their time and effort and has somewhat understanding of how to, if they're from an academic per se background, have a somewhat decent understanding of how to speak normal speak. We are, of course, helping out a lot of people who do not know. And well, as you might guess, a lot of people from the academia do not have those skills. But essentially, if you are ready to work, provide all the necessary details, statistics, facts, and links, you are welcome.
And how did you get involved in all this? Like, I know you're from Novosibirsk originally, is that right? Or
yeah.
So now you're in Glasgow and you're running this project that's half in English, or are most of the texts originally written in Russian and then translated into English, or is it a mix, or how does that?
Well, it is a mix. Yeah. I would say probably 70%, 80% is written in Russian originally.
Right. Okay. So that's how the texts originate. How do you originate? Where'd you come from?
Well, as you've mentioned, I'm from Siberia, from Novosibirsk. I think it was around 2013 when my colleague and wife, actually, now Olga Risova, who's the editor-in-chief, we were thinking, both being from out of Moscow, now Moscow, St. Petersburg, and was from Novosibirsk, she was from, still is from Izhevsk. And we were thinking of creating a platform that would allow Russians like us, young scholars from the regions, to bypass the blob that is Moscow, St. Petersburg, and be able to connect to people out there, English-speaking world primarily. And we thought, well, if there's no project that we could work with directly at the moment, we should start something of our own.
Is the regional perspective... is it dramatically different? Because I know this is like a theme that I see frequently in Russia, is that, you know, it's kind of two separate countries. There's Moscow and maybe St. Petersburg, and I don't know, you could throw in maybe some other metropolises. But then the sort of mass people, there's these masses of people that are living outside these areas. And are they different species? Are they still the same country? I mean, like you mentioned that Riddle started as kind of this initiative to give a voice to people in the regions. Is that voice significant? Like, is it really different, you think?
Well, I don't necessarily think there's a huge difference between people in Moscow and the regions. I mean, of course, we are from big cities. So, I mean, if you go somewhere in Novosibirsk Oblast, then that would be a completely different vision of the entire story. But it was more about the opportunity. It was the lack of the opportunity that people from the regions experience, and we thought that it would be a good idea to try to somehow make it easier for people from the regions to be able to communicate who they are, what they think. And we strongly believe, knowing a lot of people, having already a sort of network of young researchers, we knew exactly that they are capable of addressing many Russia affairs issues no worse or sometimes even better than folks who have all the opportunities and are there in Moscow and St. Petersburg.
And so you have this dream of sort of lifting up experts and analysts in the regions. How do you go from wanting to do that to actually doing it?
Well, it wasn't easy. We were lucky, to be honest. In 14, we've tried to establish an organization from Moscow. We were located in Moscow at the time, but it wasn't all that easy with money. And considering all the foreign agent laws, we didn't exactly want to get in that field, starting with this burden from day one. So we were fortunate to find an organization in Poland, Warsaw, Poland, Center for Polish-Russian Dialogue and Understanding, and folks from there were eager to support this idea and basically to give us the platform from Warsaw to make this happen. And that was the intersection project that ran for three years. Then we sort of parted ways, and Riddle was created as kind of fully independent entity that used all the experience that we've gained through working with Intersection, the network of authors, the established editorial board review procedure, so on and so forth. But it is basically 14, the 15 for the launch of Intersection, plus 3 years in Riddle in 2018.
when it comes to selecting topics and subjects, I mean, I know you're working with pitches from writers a lot too, but in terms of like the direction of the focus that Riddle has, are you thinking in terms of what a Western audience would be interested in, like an English-speaking audience would want to read about? Or is it, I mean, like what kind of drives the vision of the coverage that Riddle has? Like, you know, are you thinking in terms of like, I guess, who's your audience? Like who, what drives the content?
Basically, our audience differs, Russian and English version. They're a bit different. For the English version, this is the audience that studies Russia professionally, whether they're journalists, they're academics, think tanks. Some of them might be working for diplomatic missions of various countries, but these are the people who follow Russia events closely. They know what is happening. Basically, they know the basics of Russia stuff. And for them, why it makes sense to Riddle is basically that you can get something more niche, something that eludes mainstream Russia coverage. But I wouldn't say that we're necessarily tailoring the articles that we produce for the Western audience. Basically, we take the topics that are being presented to us most of the time by the authors. At sometimes, like with the COVID, naturally, we've tried to incorporate the topic and various effects that COVID has on Russia affairs, just to make sure that, you know, we're on the page with what's happening on a day-to-day basis, but we're trying not to rush to produce an analysis ASAP, because considering that we need to edit everything, translate everything, we will always be late. So we have the pleasure of taking a step, you know, take a couple of weeks for the author to produce the analysis, then do all the necessary work. And if it's possible for the article to live longer than 15 minutes, I think if we were to look at what we've published recently in the past year or two, I think roughly 20%, 30% is evergreen. I mean, those are the texts that will last forever. The rest is kind of time sensitive to a certain extent. But nevertheless, we're trying not to produce those things that would not make sense in a week.
What about you? Like, what are the issues in terms of Russian analysis that are most interesting to you, or you're kind of tracking most closely in 2021?
Well, I'm mostly interested in foreign policy narratives. That's kind of my thing. I'm currently working on now in Glasgow as part of doctoral research. Russian foreign policy narratives and Russian foreign policy approach, specifically towards China. But generally, I'm interested in think tank community and how they think about Russia, about Russian affairs, how they try to influence the decision makers, or are failing at influencing decision makers, or how they're trying to translate those ideas to the wider audience and Russia's...
Think tanks in Russia or in foreign countries?
Yeah, Russian think tanks.
Mm-hmm. And so this is an interesting subject, because I feel like I ought to know more about it. Like, do Russian think tanks, are they... Because in the United States, I mean, I used to work for one. I worked for the American Enterprise Institute for a couple of years long ago, like more than a decade ago. So I feel like I have some sense of the world of American think tanks. And I don't remember enjoying it that much, but I was there for a bit. In Russia, do they have significant influence over policymaking? Or like, how would you, if you're talking to, say, an American think tanker, and, you know, this person, they live in their world and they kind of know how it goes in DC and inside the Beltway and all that, how would you compare it to the world of Russian think tanks? Like, what's the comparison?
Well, the American think tanks are a very unique thing. The way they're structured, the way they function, their overall situation is quite unique, and it's pretty much different from the rest of the world. I mean, I know a little bit of how things are done in European think tanks, specifically with Russia. Well, more or less, you have all the think tanks that are big now, the ones that you could be following or the ones that you know of, are one way or another sponsored by the state. And
what are like the two or three biggest, most influential think tanks in Russia?
Russian Foreign Council Affairs, the RIAC, Valdai Club. Basically, these are the two main players, and they differ in how they cover affairs. And for those who are interested, there's a great report, well, a report that I've published with the Atlantic Council, co-authored with Alexander Graev, last year on Russian think tanks, and there's a lot of info there. But it would be wrong to say that Russian foreign policy think tanks influence decision making. But in looking at what they publish and how they frame certain events, you could see certain positions that are there and are influencing the overall foreign policy discourse. But as with everything, pretty much everything else, Russia, it is impossible to look at something and know this is how it works there because it's the black box and the whole thing. But to a certain degree, it is worth following what they do just to see what sort of ideas the people working with.
Do you have any predictions for 2021? Are there any kind of problem areas that you're focusing on when you're, because you said you're looking at foreign policy a lot. Are there, you know, is there another Syria on the horizon or something like that that you're anticipating? Or do you think 2021 will be a calm and peaceful year?
Well, it very much depends on how Biden administration takes upon Russia. I think pretty much everyone is expecting this to be a tough ride. First of all, the sanctions, and there are a lot of questions, a lot of actual sanction proposals that could be implemented that would alter the game altogether. Well, I wouldn't say altogether, but significantly alter the stakes. But in general, I do not think that 21 would be a year with kind of new problems, new escalations being presented. I think it's going to be about the United States trying to regain the transatlantic partnership and all the beautiful things. And Russia sort of responding, adapting, trying to find a way to keep what it believes to be hers or its. I don't know what's the correct way to say it.
Gender neutral, probably. It's a safer thing to do.
Yeah. Exactly. Predicting, not really my thing. I don't think anyone should be predicting anything at this point. I mean, we've all been wrong. But it is the topic, of course, U.S.-Russia relations for Russia. And, of course, the way that the United States changes or does not change its approach to China would also influence the way that Russia could be leveraging that. But if I had to mention one specific topic, I would say that looking at Belarus and the way that Russia's support for Lukashenko would be evolving throughout the year, I mean, he did announce the constitutional process, but, well, considering the everything that happened there, it's not that black and white. But I think depending on how Biden administration approaches Belarus, and there have been sort of hints that it could be one of the major issues he'd be looking at in Europe, this could become a very interesting story to follow.
What do you think one of the biggest shortcomings is when it comes to Western analysis of Russia? Is there something like either culturally or politically that experts in the West, when they write or they talk about Russia, they consistently get wrong in your view?
Well, I think thinking in absolutes, either Russia a declining power or it's a resurgent power, and this sort of big and simple black and white narrative seem to be dominating the discussion all the time. And I get the political sentiment because it is instrumental for political purposes, but it does not help explaining Russia's behavior. It does not help explaining the changes that occur within the country. And I do not actually know how to change that, because in 2021 and in the next few years, I believe the United States will require those simple narratives for domestic purposes. And it would be very hard to convince the decision makers in DC or elsewhere that a more nuanced approach is required. But generally, a more nuanced approach, at least in analyzing and explaining the reasons for what Russia is doing and why, is required. Also, I believe the sort of domestic factor is often neglected in the sense how the domestic transformation influences the decision making. And with this regard, I believe there's a lack of connectivity between foreign policy analysts who only look on the outside and have all these fancy concepts, and people that actually do study regional policy. If they could cooperate more looking at Russia from the outside, it would definitely help policy building cause and, well, general study of the region. 2014, a colleague of mine, Hannah Thoburn, and I published an article with the Foreign Affairs called Putin's Brain. You might have heard of that. It was not our, so the confession is, it was not our intent to in any way raise the intellectual capacity of that person or to claim that he has a certain influence on the Russian president. And we are, to a certain degree, I think, responsible for his, I wouldn't say rise, but a certain popularity among...
We're talking about Dugin, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the story was basically that we had a profile on Alexander Dugin and Neo-Eurasianism for the Foreign Affairs that was written prior to the annexation of Crimea and all those events. But when it did happen, well, the journal decided that it would be a good time to publish the article, and changing the name and the subtitle of the proposed article, they've pretty much changed the way that this work was considered, which prompted a very unhealthy obsession with the fellow. And Hannah can speak for herself, but I'm sorry for that.
All right. Beautiful. That's my interview with Anton Barbashin, the editorial director at Riddle. You can follow him on Twitter to follow his work. Please check the description of this podcast episode for a hyperlink to do just that. Feel a little guilty asking you for money, but if you enjoyed this interview and like listening to this podcast, please consider skipping on over to patreon.com/KevinRothrock. I've got two membership tiers. You can pay monthly or annually. Oh, the options. And oh, the swag. You can... Swag or swag? Swag. It's swag. Why did I say swag? Anyway, you can get swag. You can get little, you can get a, what is it, a sticker? And there's a coffee mug. Those are options. They have the logo, they have the podcast logo on them. Who doesn't want that? Many of you are still pitching in, have already pitched in. You pitched in at some point or another, and then you stopped. Maybe you're going to come back. Either way, thank you very much. Because even when I'm taking a hiatus from this podcast, I still have to pay all the hosting fees and renting the software and all that jazz. So I appreciate your support, and I'm not going anywhere. Even when I disappear for a while, I'm still doing this podcast. This is a labor of love, and the Russia guy. As always, thank you for listening. Until next time.
Говорят мы пяки-буки, как выносит нас земля. Дайте что ли карты в руки, погадать на короля.